Blog Talk Radio.
This is an Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash production.
And whenever it is you may be listening, thank you for stopping into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy radio show, coming to you live here on a beautiful Wednesday, March 3rd on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. I hope y'all are doing fantabulous, as am I. We're in that weird purgatory now, that weird purgatory in the sports world where, because of COVID, but under normal circumstances anyways, this is around the time COVID started coming in last year, but we're waiting on March Madness to commence. I think next week might be a big March Madness episode here on the podcast, or on the radio show and the podcast, which you can also check out over on our Instagram, Comical Sports Memes, or Take It Easy Podcast. You can find the Take It Easy Podcast everywhere that podcasts are distributed, I guess is the best way to put it. So that's coming up, but it's not quite at that point yet for March Madness. And we're getting closer and closer to the excitement of that. But this week we have the dead period before free agency in football, where just everyone is getting cut left and right and left and right, but overall not really super impactful. I think Tyrell Williams signed with the Lions, if you care about that, but just people getting cut, people going to different teams, just waiting for some big moves to commence, some franchise tags to come in, which we talked about last week on the show. Or 2 weeks ago on the show. 2 weeks ago on the show, we talked about the franchise tag. Those will be coming in sooner or later. In the NBA, headed to the All-Star Week. We'll talk about that. James Harden playing for the Nets against the Houston Rockets one last time before the All-Star break. MLB spring training. So we're just waiting and waiting and waiting for the actual season to commence. And we're in this weird dead period where there's not a whole lot to talk about. Engagement goes down and sports are kind of an afterthought, and there's a lot of better, more intriguing stuff going on, but the world as a whole just feels a little bit more dull as we now approach 1 year, one full smacking year of a COVID-19 pandemic. Welcome into the show, everybody. Different style today, mostly because I don't have a ton to dip into, but we'll get into a fun 14 trade I put out on our Instagram page. We'll talk about this LeBron Anthony Davis thing, some Porzingis trades, and dip into maybe a little talk of Tiger Woods. Again, I bring four or five topics into the day. We'll see how many we get through by the end of the afternoon. Check out the podcast as well if you're looking for some more content throughout the week and throughout the month, I suppose, as we head towards what will be a very, very fun March Madness coming up sooner rather than later. For our main topic of the day, I am cheating a little bit on the main topic of the day because I like to do some nuanced analysis and talk about some deep stuff in the world, which sometimes there's just not as much going on, both in your mental capacity, and sometimes you're just trying to make it through the day, and here we are with not a lot to go through. But there is some really, really good journalism that came out today from Bleacher Report that I would like to read to you. And this is a segment that we do on the podcast that I like to call Reading. It's a really good segment. Seems to be popular. But there was a deep, in-depth analysis by Farbod Esnashiri. Let's try that again. Farbod Esnashiri. Nashari. S. Nashari. I apologize for butchering that. Farbad S. Nashari. And S. Nashari did a story about the two-month trade request of James Harden forcing his way out of Houston. And it's a really, really interesting story that I would just like to read the start of. There's not just one, there's not just two, there's like three or four big revelations in this story about the interesting process of how does a superstar get traded. Because as much as I like talking about on today's podcast, the Atlanta Hawks, the Sacramento Kings, you can go on down the list to the Chicago Bulls, who I'm writing a piece about rebuilding that team. As interesting as it is, and especially in the NBA, there's just not a ton of moves that matter in the grand scheme of things. And the James Harden move is one of those that totally changes the landscape of the sport. James Harden is, and without a single shadow of a doubt, changed the balance of power in the NBA for this entire season and going forward. And so James Harden finds himself in an interesting place now in Brooklyn, going back to Houston tonight, where he had to make things a little bit dirty in order to get on out of Houston. And it was exactly what he asked for, exactly what he was going for, and he got what he wanted. It's why I've said in the NFL consistently for, I guess, what would it be, closer to 2 months now? Deshaun Watson wants to go to the Dolphins, he'll go to the Dolphins. If that's what Deshaun Watson is looking at, he's going to end up with the Miami Dolphins. And so we're looking at a situation now in Houston where we've seen it all play out, where it was a two-month trade request that the Rockets were willing to play out in order to try and up the offer. And so here's the story, again, by our buddy Farbad, however you want to pronounce it, or however he pronounces it. I'm sorry for botching his name. I guess I didn't look at it until then, and then I started going and like, Eshna Shiri. And I was like, oh, Jesus, I have butchered that. But I apologize. I did not do the necessary preparation to give him credit for this story. So this is the beginning of the piece. And maybe we'll get through the whole piece because it is really, really good journalism and really revealing if you like this background side of the trade destinations in sports, which I suppose at this point in my life, I am at a point where I enjoy these stories of sports and the inner backgrounds and how massive shifting of powers within sports leagues come to be in this way. And so here is the story of the two-month trade request for James Harden. There is no simple, easy playbook for forcing a trade in the NBA. There's no way to demand a trade where every stakeholder's interest is indulged, where everyone's a happy winner in the end. James Harden might have known that before he agitated his way to Brooklyn over the course of several bitter months. He definitely knows now. As Harden returns to Houston for the first time since the Rockets traded their franchise cornerstone, we're reminded that for NBA superstars, there is always a way out of any situation or contract. And might I add, baseball and football as well. There is always a way out of any situation or any contract. With Harden in tow, the Nets are now the latest supernova franchise fast-tracked by superstar interests, a clear title contender with elite playmakers across the board. The Rockets are now on course to bottom out in the midst of a 12-game losing streak, left to tout financial flexibility and hypothetical future players such as Evan Mobley, who I just threw in there. On September 12th, Harden exited the playoffs feeling frustrated, defeated, and confused after losing to the Lakers in five games in the Western Conference semifinals, according to sources close to Harden. His Rockets were a contender every year, but never managed to make the NBA Finals. After 8 years with the franchise, Harden was starting to feel legitimate doubt about staying in Houston, according to a source familiar with his thinking. That doubt only magnified on October 15th, when Rockets general manager Daryl Morey stepped down because of personal reasons. Morey spent nearly a decade getting Harden anything he wanted. He acquired the head coach Harden wanted in Mike D'Antoni and the players Harden wanted in Dwight Howard, Chris Paul, and Russell Westbrook. He gave Harden a max contract extension that would theoretically keep him in Houston through 2023. In the wake of Morey's departure, Harden began telling his inner circle that he was suddenly feeling a culture shift. In his eyes, the Rockets were no longer a contender. And when Morey, this is a side note from me, when Morey and D'Antoni parted ways, the phrase that I like to use and still use is, if it walks like a rebuild and it talks like a rebuild and it quacks like a rebuild, it's probably a rebuild. Throughout the month of October, Harden considered leaving Houston. Again, throughout the month of October, Harden considered leaving Houston. He had quietly spoken to someone in his inner circle about his interest in the Brooklyn Nets, Miami Heat, and Philadelphia 76ers. In November, the thought of joining Brooklyn grew more intriguing for Harden. He started training with Kevin Durant at the Mamba Academy, developing a relationship with the team. And by November 11th, Harden indicated to Russell Westbrook he wanted to be traded to Brooklyn. As a result, Westbrook asked out. And this is the big part. Not because of Harden's partying tendencies or the Rockets' cultural issues, and side note, or the fact that Russell Westbrook was pissed at James Harden during the bubble when they were trying to start a team film session, and he said start without Harden, but D'Antoni said when he gets back, we'll just have to restart again. That's an extra story that we found out. But simply because he knew Harden wanted out. Nothing to do with anything else or being James's team or the fact that they were total counters of each other like conventional wisdom had suggested. Reporting has said that Harden indicated to Westbrook by November 11th that he wanted to be traded. And Westbrook went to management and demanded to be traded before then. Now, Westbrook was easier to move than James Harden because the deal that they constructed, this is again, this is me talking, this is not from the story. Deal was easier to construct because all they did was just switch equal contracts between Westbrook and John Wall and pick up an extra first round pick. And so this is Westbrook asked out only because he knew Harden wanted out. Harden, back to the story now, back to James Harden. Harden spent significant time in Los Angeles with Durant in mid-November and became fully committed to the idea of playing with the Nets. The two met to reaffirm their desire to play with one another and started laying the foundation for a trade, sources say, which, side note again, I found really interesting this part. Obviously, the big stories are Harden wanted out back in October, had always had his sights on the Nets, and then Westbrook went out because Harden wanted out. Those are obviously big storylines. But I found it interesting that it was Harden and Durant who committed themselves to the idea of playing for Brooklyn, that they do not specifically mention Kyrie Irving in the story. Not that they were ever going to trade Kyrie Irving. We'll get to that later on. But it was Durant and Harden who negotiated the terms of we would like to play together in Brooklyn, which is really interesting to think about. And then they continue to, as it says, reaffirm their desire to play with each other and then lay the foundation for such a trade. On November 14th, 2 months before the trade was officially announced, early talks between Houston and Brooklyn included Harden for Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, Torian Prince, and Jared Allen. The picks weren't finalized at this point, but a verbal agreement was made, according to sources close to Harden and Durant. A Nets spokesperson denies a verbal agreement was made at that time. Harden and Durant believed the deal was done and celebrated the occasion together. This is on November 14th. By November 17th, news of the potential deal had spread across the league. Harden and Durant thought it would be finalized on November 22nd when trades could officially be announced. But Rockets management changed its tune. Harden, Durant, and the Nets had underestimated the Rockets' capacity to posture for a better deal. Quote, Houston was being difficult. A front office executive familiar with the Rockets' negotiating tactics at the time told Bleacher Report. So that is fascinating for multiple reasons. First of which, and the most fascinating, is that the original deal included Dinwiddie, who obviously tore his ACL early on in the season and is now an impending free agent, so there was no point in adding Dinwiddie to the deal, but that a verbal agreement had been agreed to that including him in the deal. Other than that, it's exactly the same deal, except throw in Rodionis Karukas going back to the Houston Rockets, which is almost a nothing piece, which maybe Spencer Dinwiddie would have been a nothing piece as well, but it's still interesting to think about that being thrown together in that amount of time. And then the Rockets going to Cleveland and going to the Indiana Pacers, as you recall, when the news broke live on the air during our NBA, during our season premiere here on Open Talk Radio, that the trade had been done, the deal had been finalized, they were going to make it happen. And it was interesting to see all of that play out in real time. But the idea of the deal being verbally agreed to back in November, when Woj gets the report that Harden's intentions are to make his way to the Brooklyn Nets, which was around that time, I don't remember the exact time of that tweet, that was basically like Harden's interests remain the same, that Harden intends to go to Harden intends to end up with the Brooklyn Nets, and that's where his entire focus is at this point. And so that is interesting to think about from the grand scheme of things. But both of those, well, actually all three of those things that I mentioned are really, really interesting when you think about them in the microcosm and how this played out. Basically 4 months later now. It's interesting how all of that played out. So back to the story here. In the following days, this is after November 17th, when the Rockets had backed out of the deal and were working to get some sort of better deal once everything went public. In the following days, Harden began making his partying increasingly public. He showed up to training camp late, appeared visibly out of shape, and believed he could force a trade if he could anger team governor Tillman Fertitta enough, according to sources close with Harden. He would have to outdo what Jimmy Butler did in Minnesota, end quote, a rival Eastern Conference executive said. I forgot to add the quote at the beginning. So, quote, he would have to outdo what Jimmy Butler did in Minnesota, a rival Eastern Conference executive said. Which, if you may have forgotten, Jimmy Butler basically held out, demanded a trade in an interview with Rachel Nichols, and ended up showing up to a practice, grabbing the third stringers, and balling up on Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, and some other starters, chanting, quote, "You MFers need me." For those who needed the update, that was just me explaining the situation. Back to the story. Harden had to figure it out on the fly. He was trying to execute a forced trade like Anthony Davis's exit from New Orleans, but without the backing of a super agent like Rich Paul. Since 2018, after he parted ways with Rob Pelinka and Diana Day from Landmark Sports Agency, Harden's mother, Monia Willis, had represented her son. Harden eventually realized he needed some assistance and hired Jason Rain and Chafee Fields from Wasserman Sports Agency to get him a deal. Anyways, as Harden delayed his arrival to training camp in December, the Heat became the front runners to land him. Harden's main preference was and always was the Brooklyn Nets, but he had no problem going to Miami. Jimmy Butler had even okayed the trade, according to league sources. Barry Jackson of the Miami Herald reported that the Heat were open to offering two of their young players a 2025 first-round pick, provided Oklahoma City unlocked their 2023 first-rounder owed them, and Andre Iguodala and Kelly Olynyk. While Harden participated in Houston's training camp, he believed he would be traded to the Nets or Heat by the start of the season on December 22nd. But the Rockets wanted more than what the Miami Heat could offer. Adam Barai of Five Reasons Sports Network reported the Rockets wanted Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero, Precious Achiuwa, Kendrick Nunn, salary fillers, two first-round picks, and four pick swaps. But that wasn't happening. The Heat refused and told the Rockets their final offer. And so on December 21st, the Heat pulled out of the deal, according to ESPN's Brian Windhorst. Harden began taking matters into his own hands. On the same day that the Heat pulled out, Harden got into a confrontation with teammate Jay Sean Tate during practice and threw a ball at him, according to Sean Sharania of The Athletic, which I remember when that happened. It was really interesting and really kind of funny to think about it. So then on January 12th, after the Rockets started out nearly 500 to start the season, Harden drew a clear line in the sand, telling reporters that the Rockets were, quote, just not good enough. And there was no coming back to the locker room after those remarks. At that point, the Rockets stopped posturing. The next day, in which we on the Take It Easy radio show were hosting our season premiere on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash, the Brooklyn Nets had basically a deal in place, and Harden was confident he would join the Nets by the end of the week. There were even legitimate conversations that Kyrie Irving was potentially on the table, and some in the Nets organization had grown increasingly frustrated with Irving's absences at the time, according to sources. But two Nets sources deny he was ever included in any serious conversation and said that the idea came from the Rockets, not the Nets. During this time, the Rockets were reportedly using the 76ers as leverage to increase the Brooklyn Nets' offer. The Sixers offered a package centered around Ben Simmons and Matisse Thybulle and didn't even call to counteroffer, according to Keith Pompey of the Philadelphia Inquirer. We'll get back to the story in just a second, the last little part of it, but this is the last of the trade request. And it's interesting to watch it all play out in real time, isn't it? Like, we don't know things in the background. We're getting pieces here and there, but piecing the whole picture together is always really difficult. And this is what history is for. And I think it's a big part of why I love history is, and why I'm fascinated by history and enjoy studying it, is that with time, we can learn a lot of information about the past that then in turn we can internalize and use to help us evaluate such things in the future. And so I think that this applies deeper than the sports side of it, and I obviously apply a lot of it in my own life, but it's interesting how when you apply it to sports, it helps us gain a better picture of what it is we're seeing. Because we're seeing James Harden get traded to Miami, and we're seeing – or I'm sorry, to Brooklyn, and we're seeing rumors of him going to the Sixers and rumors of him going to Miami, and it's all fascinating in one, but at the same time, we don't have all the information, and we'll never have all the information. We'll have a lot of great reporting that helps to surface a lot of this, especially like free reporting like Bleacher Report has done or The Athletic did last week when we talked about Russell Wilson and how that all blew up for Russell Wilson in the span of like 4 days. 4 days and 4 hours that everything blew up for Russell Wilson, which was really fascinating to watch it all play out. But it's really fascinating because we are living in this space where we see Harden trade, and the Harden trade is now part of history. Like, undoubtedly, the Harden trade is now a part of history, and it's fascinating to watch it all play out in the grand scheme of things. And in the grand scheme of things, it's a huge NBA shifting move, which I feel like in come July, we'll recognize that it ended up being the balance of power in the NBA that leads to the Brooklyn Nets, at the very least, showing up in the NBA Finals. Now, we'll get to LeBron and Anthony Davis in a second, but it's going to be interesting to watch it all play out in real time. But just to finish up the story real quick, and I did end up going through the whole story because it is really, really fascinating. Quote, the Nets deal happened shortly thereafter, 2 months in the making. Harden finally engineered his escape, and the Rockets could finally move on. I guess that was just the quote means the start of the story. This is an actual quote. Quote, I would say what's super exciting about this deal is it gives us flexibility. Houston general manager Raphael Stone told reporters afterwards, in the NBA, draft picks, especially high picks, are the best currency. That's a good spin, but recent NBA history and the podcast we did today on the Take It Easy podcast would suggest multiple superstars are the best currency in the NBA. Just ask the Lakers and the Golden State Warriors. The Nets have a near certain future of relevance and deep playoff runs, and the Rockets have a wholly uncertain outlook. The Harden saga pushed the boundaries of player empowerment, where health and safety rules were cast aside, teammates were disrespected, and fans and NBA Twitter alike were enraged. But NBA Twitter is always enraged. It's a dangerous thought for Milwaukee Bucks fans, Atlanta Hawks fans, or any team surrounded by a single star. What happens if Giannis Antetokounmpo or Trae Young suddenly wants out despite having years left on his contract? What happens if Devin Booker can't stand the downsides of playing in a small market? Or Karl-Anthony Towns? Or, as I'll probably talk about at some point, Kristaps Porzingis? As Harden proved, there is always a way out. All right, so with that being said, let us transition on to this LeBron and Anthony Davis story, even though I am I did kind of segue my way into Porzingis talk, but I guess we'll get to Porzingis in a little bit. So the Lakers end up losing to the Suns yesterday, and LeBron James will sit when the Lakers travel up here to good old Sacramento. I've spent a lot of time at the Golden One Center in the last couple of years, whether it be inside the stadium or outside the stadium. Downtown Sacramento and the downtown common area is definitely a fun place to be. So I have seen that place forwards, backwards, and sideways, and the Lakers will go to face the Kings tonight. LeBron will sit, no Anthony Davis. The Lakers will just be the Lakers on a back-to-back and maybe lose, maybe win. I'm sure the betting line is in Sacramento's favor, but it's probably just trying to generate some value in favor of the Lakers so that maybe all of a sudden you can get, Kings are 3.5-point favorites, but Vegas is going overwhelmingly bets on the Lakers. So Vegas is, Vegas looks to be banking on the Kings ever so slightly to actually cover the spread in that game tonight. But anyways, is anyone feeling concerned for the Lakers? Because Anthony Davis's injuries will doom their season. Like, there's no ifs, no ands, no buts about it. Anthony Davis injuries will doom the Lakers season. And they said Anthony Davis would be back after the All-Star break. Again, we talked about it in real time, is that now it's 4 weeks. Okay, so Vogel says Anthony Davis is on track to play in 4 weeks, even though they said after the deadline, which was obvious, or after the All-Star break, which was obviously way too optimistic for a potential Achilles injury. So Anthony Davis is going to be out for a month. The playoffs don't begin for a good while, so the Lakers should be okay there. And look, seeding doesn't matter. The Lakers, the seeding does not matter at all. But Anthony Davis's health going into the playoffs really matters. And this means sitting him all the way through a round one series, or sitting him all the way into the playoffs at the very least, until he's at least 75-80% healthy. Because Anthony Davis injuries will doom the Lakers season. No ifs, no ands, no buts. But then there's that LeBron James side of it, in that LeBron James is just so overwhelming. Like, he punted on the season when he got hurt, when he first got to the Lakers. But after that, it's been totally overwhelming, where he's been to 9 consecutive NBA finals, apart from the season where he got hurt. And it's just honestly unbelievable how all that has played out. And the Lakers will head into the trade deadline and they'll make some small moves, because that's all they can do. the Lakers can only tinker. They're not going to be bringing in a Thaddeus Young. They're not going to be bringing in, you know, an Otto Porter. They're not going to be bringing in a Nikola Vukovic. They're not going to be bringing in anyone with a big name in at this trade deadline. But they do need Anthony Davis, and that's the bottom line there. And maybe a Montrezl Harrell trade is in order. Maybe they can dump Wes Matthews on somebody. Maybe you can tinker those pieces, but that's the biggest thing you can do. Ultimately, success or failure will come down to Anthony Davis, because the Lakers, even with LeBron James, are totally doomed if it works in this way where he's not going to be back. And that's the only part I'm asking about. Like, there's only so much you can talk about with the Lakers and the Nets and the NBA. But does anyone else feel the genuine concern? Like, is anyone else feeling worried if you're a fan of the Lakers, if you're a fan of the NBA at large, and you're trying to evaluate this from a what's going to happen when we get close to the playoffs? Like, is there concern about this injury? Because, yes, he's been gone for a while, and the Lakers have been fine, but regular season games ultimately don't matter. But there's got to be some level of genuine concern here, and not just with the fact that everyone likes to talk about is LeBron burned out. I've heard the word burned out so much in the last few days just talking about this story, and it's really just strange to see it all play out in real time and watch it in front of our eyes. Like, it's really interesting to see this go from what I said before, which is, hey, they're kind of in trouble. Like, an Anthony Davis injury puts them in trouble, especially with the Achilles, because we all have scares about what happened to Kevin Durant and how that ended. Now, that's a worst case scenario, and I'm not going to fear monger with the injury, but I was hearing, and this is one of the worst parts about it, I was hearing people who were literally like, he'll be back in 4 weeks, they'll be okay. No, he's not going to be back in 4 weeks. He's going to be back in like 8 weeks. Already 3 weeks in and he's 4 weeks out, which 4 weeks out was three more weeks than what they had planned originally, or two more weeks than what they had planned originally. So Anthony Davis is going to be out for a while. And that's a damning indictment. Now, we can have the conversation of how many teams can the Lakers beat with just LeBron and Dennis Schroeder and Marc Gasol. Sure, we can pick apart whether or not they can beat Portland. We can pick apart whether or not that they can beat, I don't know, Phoenix. We can pick apart whether or not the Lakers can beat Utah. I think they can still win the Western Conference, even without Anthony Davis, but there's still a lot that needs to go into it in the beforehand, and that's got to be a little bit concerning for the Lakers. Like, there's got to be just a little bit of some genuine concern from that side of the aisle if you're a Laker fan. Or just a fan of the NBA at large, there's got to be a little bit of concern in there. All right, let's talk some Porzingis, because Kristaps Porzingis was in the news over the weekend about a potential trade coming up real quick here with Porzingis. He unfollowed the Dallas Mavericks, which, again, I don't like spending my time evaluating the tweets and Twitter activity of NBA players or NFL players like J.J. Watt. I'd rather just propose fake trades and be armchair. And that's more of my niche for how to fill the void without sports, is to be armchair GM. But you can see the story with Porzingis and why the writing is on the wall. And I've said it for a while that Kristaps Porzingis is a really good player. But there is a reason other than his play and his injuries, which are the two that we think about most often. I mean, Porzingis is averaging 20 points a game. He shoots about 34% from three. He's been really poor as of recent from the three-point line. But Kristaps' reasoning for this trade is that Dallas sees some writing on the wall. And what is this writing on the wall? That Kristaps Porzingis, who has been – remember, they gave up a lot to get him. They gave up two first-round picks to acquire him. Kristaps Porzingis, under his current contract, has 4 years remaining on his contract. He will make $29.4 million this season, $31 million next season, $33 million the following season, and a $36 million player option following season. And this was what was most concerning for the Dallas Mavericks when they got Kristaps Porzingis at a discounted value from the New York Knicks back in 2019. What is the injury situation with Kristaps Porzingis? Because he was coming off of, was it an Achilles or an ACL? I can't remember which one it was. It was a big injury for Kristaps Porzingis. And Kristaps was healthy last year until he wasn't healthy. And he started to look like a Kristaps that we used to, like a 7'3" dude that can pull up from 3-point range, but, you know, is also 7'3". And so Kristaps is in this interesting position who had to, I think he tore his ACL before then. And this year he tore his meniscus in his right knee. And that was back in the bubble, and it led to Luka hitting that magical shot in game four to make it a 2-2 series when there was a brief moment where everyone thought Kristaps was going to pull the, or I'm sorry, that Luka was going to pull the magical upset against the Clippers, and Luka had officially arrived, and he was the cold-blooded assassin that was going to take down the Clippers, but it turns out the Clippers weren't actually as good as everyone thought they were. And then they got slaughtered in game five and lost game six, and the series was over. But the case in point was the Dallas Mavericks were in this interesting position where Kristaps Porzingis was not expendable. He was still a top 50 player, but Kristaps Porzingis was just too expensive. Kristaps Porzingis could hinder their long-term ability to be financially flexible and bring in other players. And so it makes all the sense in the world that they may be shopping Kristaps Porzingis. And if they were to trade Kristaps Porzingis at this point, it would be the equivalent of selling low. But they're selling low so that it doesn't bottom out. And what does bottoming out look like? It looks like something like a Russell Westbrook. It looks something like a John Wall, where they have to end up being traded for each other. It ends up looking like a Bismack Biyombo or a Timofey Mozgov, not necessarily in the production of the play production, but they're just dumped with extra players just for the salary cap relief. And that's what bottoming out has looked like in the past. Now with Kristaps Porzingis, the bottoming out is that he becomes still a viable NBA player. I don't think he'll become Joakim Noah on the New York Knicks, but he'll be a viable NBA player, the equivalent of what they're paying right now for Tim Hardaway. And he's making $30 million and $33 million on average for the next three seasons. And that's the concern that the Dallas Mavericks have, is what if it becomes a Blake Griffin situation? And you have this magical star, this Luka Doncic, and Luka is set up to be for the next 20 years an NBA great. He's 22 years old. He's nearly averaging a triple-double. He finished top 10 in the MVP last year, and he'll finish top 10 in the MVP maybe this year. People were picking him at the start of the year to win MVP, which I said, no chance. Dallas is going to be fighting for a playoff spot because Kristaps is going to be out to start the season. And so they're going to get off to a rough start and have to try and bounce back. And lo and behold, even though I haven't watched any Dallas Mavericks games this year, the Dallas Mavericks currently sit at a wonderful record, and this is better than what they were just a few months ago, or I guess a month ago, a few weeks to a month ago. The Dallas Mavericks sit pretty at 17-16, holding the number 10 seed in the Western Conference, which is about where I thought they would be. Not quite how they got there was interesting, and the fact that they're only two games back of the San Antonio Spurs for the five seed. But all in all, you got to be a little bit shocked by what's gone on. And I think this is why Porzingis is available. And by the way, the Mavericks have won 8 of 10 as of late. So they have bounced back big time from being, before this stretch, 9-14 to start the season. So in the territory of the Pelicans, they have bounced back tremendously and separated themselves from this pack of bad teams, which now the Pelicans are 11.5 back, Thunder 12.5, Kings 13, Rockets 15, and the Timberwolves. Geez, the Timberwolves. Oh, my goodness. Oh, Jesus, Minnesota. Minnesota in their last Minnesota in their last 16 games is like 1-15. This is like brutal. But I'm sorry, Timberwolves. It is brutal to be a Timberwolves fan right now. But anyways, so the Mavericks have separated themselves from the team's bottoming out at this point. And Dallas is going to get one of these playoff spots, but that's kind of where they were last year. And last year they did it with Porzingis until the playoffs when they didn't have Porzingis. I think game 2 against the Clippers was the last time we saw Porzingis in the bubble. And so maybe they can get John Collins. I feel like that's a deal that's like a match made in heaven, where Hawks are willing to take the risk. Dallas could take the young player who they could give an extension to. Maybe not, maybe at the rate of Porzingis, but maybe a little less than Porzingis. And it's a match made in heaven at this point for both sides, I feel like. And maybe Atlanta will regret it the same way Dallas regrets it, but I feel like a Porzingis for John Collins swap makes a lot of sense at this point. But the point overall for Porzingis is just, it makes all the sense in the world why they're trying to look for a trade. Now, this is the thing. A lot of the times you're trying to find upgrades of superstars and like all-stars that hit the market. And to be fair, all-stars don't hit the market very often. There won't be any you can acquire at this year's break. There may be like a Zach LaVine you can acquire next year. And whether or not the Mavericks would, you know, flip Porzingis for LaVine, or whether the Bulls would even want to do that, well, that's another question, considering the Mavericks don't have their first round pick this year and they don't have their first round pick the year after that, I want to say. I'm not 100% sold on that. I don't know the exact numbers. But the point, yeah, that would be correct. So it would be they would have no first-rounder this year and no first-rounder in 2023. So they couldn't really give up a pick if they wanted to Porzingis for like a Zach LaVine and get a legitimate second star or a second all-star to pair with Luka. Not that Porzingis isn't a legitimate all-star. He's made all-star teams in the past, but he is very expensive. And coming off of ACL and meniscus injuries for a guy who, again, is 7'3", and a lot of his game relies on athleticism. Modern medicine makes it so that his career isn't going to totally fall off the rails, but it could. He's only shooting 34% from the three-point line this year, so there are some definite concerns in there for Porzingis and for the Mavericks. And it makes all the sense in the world that they are doing their due diligence to see what the market is for Porzingis. They would have to sell low to pull the trigger on a trade. I don't think anyone is aggressively pursuing Kristaps Porzingis at this point, unless you're a small market organization that could make the best offer. Like, even if you were a small market organization, everyone's got like at least a top 50 player now. Like, even Cleveland took on Andre Drummond, and that was basically a salary dump. I don't even think Cleveland would be in on Porzingis. It would have to be like an Atlanta, or it would have to be a Sacramento. But I don't think Sacramento would pull the move, and I don't think Dallas would do it unless they could get a player of similar caliber to Porzingis. They don't have to get Porzingis back, like a Porzingis-level player. John Collins would be that. It's why I think it's a perfect deal for both sides. But it makes perfect sense why the Mavericks are doing their due diligence and pursuing a trade of Kristaps Porzingis. I think that Dallas is in a good position. Dallas is in a good position to succeed in the long run, and they have Luka Doncic. You have this superstar. And all-stars don't come along all that often. Porzingis is still, although hanging on by a thread, a top 50 player in the sport, and those don't come along very often. So unless you can get one back or the opportunity to acquire one in the long run, maybe just store Porzingis and hope for the best. Again, they're doing their due diligence. I understand why they're doing it. I would have done it myself. I would have done it this last offseason too, but he was coming off of injury. And it makes all the sense why Dallas is shopping around Porzingis, because they want to continue to have some sort of flexibility and not stick themselves to this Doncic and Porzingis tandem, which, you know, as it currently stands, it doesn't look like it's good enough to make it out of the first round. They need probably someone a little bit better than Kristaps Porzingis, or Kristaps Porzingis to develop into, you know, the 25-year-old all-star that he is, or 26. Porzingis might be 26 now. Yeah, he's 25 going on 26. And if he develops into an all-star again, well, you have two all-stars. It's good enough to maybe make a second-round exit. But, you know, as it currently stands, I think the Mavericks are just waiting for an opportunity to find a guy to pair around Luka Doncic, who might be better than, and maybe cheaper, better and cheaper than Kristaps Porzingis. Until then, they'll just continue tinkering and hope for the best on Kristaps Porzingis, who is, as it presently stands, the seventh highest paid forward in the NBA. And so I think they would be happy to not have to continue paying him at such a rate into what could be a late 20s that don't bode as well for the Latvian unicorn, who the Mavericks, you know, they gave up a lot of picks for him. They got him at a lower price from Dallas. Ultimately, the trade became Dennis Smith and those two first-round picks, which, again, the Knicks haven't used those first-round picks yet, but they're still sitting there. Their first one comes up this year, so we'll see how the New York Knicks decide to proceed under these circumstances. It should be interesting. Unless the Knicks used one last year, that's a good question. What are the Knicks' future draft picks? I'll just look that up real quick. Knicks' future draft picks. The New York Knicks still have, the Mavericks' first-round pick this year. So 2021 and 2023, they have the New York Knicks have the Mavericks' first-round draft picks. The Knicks have a lot of draft picks, I got to admit. The Knicks do look like they have, I don't think they have a plan, but the New York Knicks do look like they've put themselves in long-term flexibility. They've given themselves long-term flexibility, depending on what they want to do. Will they mess it up? Probably, because this is something I've talked about before. The New York Knicks' incentives are not to win NBA championships. Ownership of the New York Knicks' incentive is to make money, as is most of these NBA teams. The organization's objective is to make money, and they have a very hands-on owner in James Dolan. And they can continue to put inferior products on the floor, and they still continue to make more money than anyone else in the sport, which a lot of that has location tied to it. But the New York Knicks' objective is to make tons of money, and they continue to do that. This year, they happen to be putting a pretty good product out on the floor, which they got slaughtered by San Antonio. If you want just an update on how the NBA has gone this year, the New York Knicks went from the 4 seed to the 6 seed just from one drubbing by the San Antonio Spurs, and now they could fall to 7th. In the Eastern Conference with one loss. So that kind of is all you need to know about how this season has gone in the NBA for teams like the New York Knicks, who should bottom out at some point. Like, New York Knicks are not going to be a 6th seed, or like the Heat are better than them. The Pacers are better than them. The Hawks should be better than them. I don't know if the Hawks are better than them. The Bulls should be better than them. Not that they are, but they should be. So the Knicks will bottom out, and they'll make the playoffs as the main objective for them. They should make the play-in round and hopefully pull off an upset there. I think Knicks fans will be happy if they could pull an upset or just win, even if it's not an upset. Just get a victory in the play-in round and get a 7-game series where they can get drubbed by the Brooklyn Nets or by the Milwaukee Bucks. Like, they'd be content if that's how it plays out for the New York Knicks. But again, incentive for the New York Knicks is to make money, and they do a really, really good job at making money, and it works in their favor in the long run, and they continue to make money, and they continue to meet their objectives even as they put inferior products out on the floor. But this year, they finally have a good product, or at least a semi-decent product, which is good by the New York Knicks standards. All right, let's just real quick dip into this 4-team trade that I proposed earlier, that I just like the idea of how it sounds, how it looks, how it feels. Let's see. So that was just a Padres update. But anyways, here is the proposed 4-team trade that would reunite DeAndre Hopkins, J.J. Watt, and Deshaun Watson in Arizona, which, by the way, I think Arizona – should consider it, even if I wouldn't make the move. Like, you got to have some faith in Kyler Murray, and you know, crazy quarterback trades don't happen all that often, but it's interesting because Deshaun Watson does not want to go to the New York Jets. And there's nothing the New York Jets can do about it. Like, that's okay. If he doesn't want to go there, then so be it. That's the case. But if the Jets can't land Deshaun Watson, maybe they could land the next best thing with all their draft picks, and that is Kyler Murray, because Kyler Murray can't reject a trade to the New York Jets, which is funny to think about. And if they put him with Saleh and LaFleur, I do find that to be a rather interesting predicament that they have put themselves into. But anyways, so you are looking at a scenario where you have Deshaun Watson going to the Arizona Cardinals. In exchange, the New York Jets receive Kyler Murray and a third-round pick from the Arizona Cardinals. But now we need some extra teams to get this in order. So the Houston Texans will also be partakers in this trade from a draft pick standpoint. The San Francisco 49ers will get Sam Darnold and the number 34 pick in order to, the 34 pick is the second rounder of the New York Jets. And the Jets will move down in that trade, or I'm sorry, the 49ers will move down, pick up Sam Darnold, go to pick 34, and pick 12 will go to the Houston Texans. Pick 12 is what the San Francisco 49ers currently hold at the top of the draft. So pick 12 goes to the Texans. The number 2 pick goes to the Jets. The number 23 pick goes, or I'm sorry, the number 2 pick belongs to the Jets. That goes to the Texans as part of the deal. And the number 12 pick goes to the Texans. The 23 pick, which also belongs to the Jets, it was part of the Jamal Adams trade, that goes to the Houston Texans. And the number 16 pick in the draft via the Arizona Cardinals goes to the Houston Texans. So the Texans get 4 first-round picks in this year's draft. The San Francisco 49ers get rid of pick 12, move down to pick 34. They add Sam Darnold, which, by the way, 34 is a really valuable pick. For those who don't know, 34 is valuable because pick 34 is a second. You get first-round picks at second-round values, which can be really huge for a team. It's what the Colts got with Darius Leonard. On second round value, it's what's the name of the, never mind, Chandler Jones. The point being overall, you can get great value with those second round picks because they're first round prospects that fall into the second round. Because there's usually like 40 or so first round prospects every year, and some teams jump the gun, like the Seahawks picking Jordan Brooks at pick 27, a fine player, not a first round pick, but still a fine player to have on your team. And so that pick 34 goes to the Niners. Sam Darnold goes to the 49ers. You have Kyler Murray going to the Jets, and they get a third-round pick for their sake. So they give up pick 34, get moved down to pick they give up pick 34. They move down into the third round as part of the deal, and then they give up their 2 first-round picks, pick number 2 and pick number 23, to land Kyler Murray. If you want to think about it that way, is that they move down from second to third round, and then they give up 2 first round picks, pick number 2 and pick number 23, to land Kyler Murray from the Cardinals, who take Deshaun Watson. And basically, to get Deshaun Watson, the Cardinals give up Kyler Murray, a third round pick, and their number 16 pick in the draft. So they give up Kyler Murray, a first rounder, and a third rounder to land Deshaun Watson, and the Texans walk away with 4, count them, 4 first round picks. And the Jets, to land Kyler in that third round pick, give up, forgot to throw in Sam Darnold. So they give up Sam Darnold, 2 first round picks, and then move down from the second round to the third round to land Kyler Murray. To land Kyler Murray, they move down 1 round in the back on day 2 and give up 2 first-round picks, including number 2 and number 23. If you want to review the whole trade, if that wasn't enough, follow comical_sports_memes on Instagram. and check out the recent post. At least it's recent at the time of this show. You can listen however and whenever you want. So, of course, the times may change on when it comes out, but still an interesting trade scenario. Seems to be people find it interesting. So we'll see how all of that plays out in the long run. It is interesting to think about this. We also did one with Russell Wilson a while ago, and we also did a Bradley Beal trade that would see 7 first-round picks going to the Washington Wizards. We talked about that on the radio show as well, which all of it ends up being super interesting. I really enjoy doing the fake trades because I like being armchair GM. It's something at this time of the year that can be really, really fun, is to play armchair GM and see it all play out in the grand scheme of things. I do enjoy doing little silly things like that. Here's the Russell Wilson one real quick. By the way, we're beefing with Bears fans, just in case you wanted to know. The one I had for Russell Wilson would send him to the Cowboys, Dak Prescott in a 3rd-rounder to the Falcons, Matt Ryan and Tyron Smith to the Broncos, and then Von Miller, Drew Lock, the number 4, number 9, and number 10 picks in the draft go to the Seattle Seahawks. That one didn't get as much love. This one gets a lot of people with even trades for all. There's been a lot of proness on the trade. Like, a lot of people are very much in favor of this deal. A lot of winners, not a lot of angry fans. There's always going to be some angry people in the DMs, and that's just kind of part of the trade-offs that we have, but it is really interesting to see all of it play out the way it does. Because people are not angry about this one. People will always find reasons to be angry, but they just don't happen to be super angry about this trade, which, all good. I'm happy to do it either way. But ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping into the Take It Easy radio show. We got another fantabulous radio show coming tomorrow, along with the Game Chat Boys, and you can check out all the other great lineup here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash coming up this afternoon, and Thursday's content as well. Also, check out our podcast, of course, Take It Easy, everywhere and anywhere that you get your podcasts. And as I mentioned off the top, check us out on Instagram for all kinds of cool content that will be coming your way. So with that being said, everybody, thank you for stopping in today. And as always, take it easy. We'll talk to you again tomorrow here on the radio show.